the midweek drive, zooming into the future and energized by the now.
Up to mighty London came an Irish lad one day. All the streets were paved with gold, so everyone was gay. Singing songs of Piccadilly, Strand and Leicester Square, till Paddy got excited and he shouted to them there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Irish Molly, oh, saying, should you not receive it right and let me know. If I make mistakes in spelling, Molly dear, said he, remember it's the pen that's bad, don't lay the blame on me. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. To Irish Paddy, saying Mike Maloney wants to marry me, and so leave the Strand and Piccadilly, or you'll be to blame, for love has fairly drove me silly, hoping you're the same. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know.
And there we are, a jolly little song to sing whilst you're crouching in a rat-infested, flooded, muddy trench as the Germans would be barging at you with bayonets, with machine guns rattling away and artillery shells piercing the ground all around, whilst men would be suddenly standing up and then fall down again with a hole in their face. What the hey, I thought I'd actually launch this particular Midweek Drive Morning Edition and Tipperary Tale with indeed a fully extended version of It's a Long Way to Tipperary, including, of course, the romance of the whole sequence as well. That only means that we need to say those immortal words with another tale from Tipperary. It's Jenny Finch.
Hello there. Thank you for the introductory song. This episode is from May 2022. Whilst not wanting to seem too mawkish, I have to agree with Forrest Gump, who famously declared, "Life is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get." And so it was this last fortnight. Considering we live a very quiet life deep in the countryside, life throws a lot of surprises at us. Some are good, some are not so good. Last week, for example, we faced up to the hospital appointment we were both secretly dreading, a jolly trip to Limerick to see an endocrinologist. Now, we've not had a good relationship with endocrinologists, with the sole exception of a wonderful consultant at James Cook Hospital in Middlesbrough. I have been somewhat harsh in my description of them in the past. Jackie's experience at Limerick did not help, as they kept her waiting for 7 hours after her heart attacks, didn't show, and then accused her of not bothering to wait. You can tell what we were expecting by our choice of socks. Monks the Scream seemed to fit the bill rather neatly. It was a surprise, and a good one, to encounter our first female endocrinologist. There was another wait, of course, but it was worth it. Rihanna listened to us, answered questions, and had some very good and helpful suggestions. Prime amongst them was to try another version of a drug Jackie had struggled with twice before. This version has fewer side effects, apparently, and if successful, can be very, very beneficial. Jackie agreed to try it, and we are a week in now. I cannot stress how much I admire her determination. I'm not sure I'd be that brave, to be honest. The first few days weren't too bad. A good surprise. Then it went a bit downhill. I say a bit like the run into a ski jump. The second dose is due today, and we're hoping for a good surprise this time. It's been quiet on the workman front, with no sign of the pump man, the electrician, or our original plumber. Monday's another public holiday for May Day, so next week may be quiet also. Fergus did come with his mini digger and cleared the fence line ready for Bill, however. He's done a sterling job levelling and redistributing the land and some of the mulch. The worst of the fly-tipped rubble has been buried, and he rousted out a nest of rats too. Soon it will be secure along the road, though there will be little mammal gates sighted at the tracks across the wood. These should allow wild animals access but keep out strange dogs and humans. With Jackie somewhat incapacitated, I've been doing most of the shopping. Earlier this week, I ran into the nearest town to get a few things, going to the local spa and the only supermarket near us. I was looking for cake, as Jackie's not been up to baking. Now, the Irish make splendid cakes, a bit sweet and occasionally overloaded with icing, but mainly very acceptable. Lent is over, and cakes of all ilk are back in the shops. But so is that Irish delicacy, brack. This is a dark brown fruit loaf with the texture of sawdust, so dry it sucks the moisture out of the air when unwrapped. Everyone else seems to love it. In one shop, there were six different brands. Everyone in the family makes brack, it seems. Mam's brack, auntie's brack, granny's brack, sister's friend's gardener's hamster's brack. Okay, I made that last one up, but really, Jackie says it's like punishing yourself for having a cake. We've had some quiet days, and I've got some decent writing done, as the weather has turned cold and grey again after some lovely days and glorious sunsets. We've been indoors. I've been roaring through another puzzle, a Bruegel painting this time. It looks very complex, but is actually one of the easier jigsaws. I think I'm just putting off the moment I have to face what may be my nemesis, a Jackson Pollock. It is a pleasant distraction from much of the daytime TV, which can be dire. It was so bad one day. The highlight was an animated canary singing a song entitled Poxy Chores. This was an advert from the gas board to encourage people to test their carbon monoxide alarms, but the words have offended some people and they've had a sack full of complaints. Really. If you're curious, you can find it on YouTube and judge for yourself. I say thank you, gas board, for livening up our days. So, like a box of chocolates, some surprises, some good and some not so good. I wonder what life will throw at us next week. This is the 50th episode of 12. I wonder how many more I can write. Hopefully there will be enough good surprises to report and maybe even some writing news soon. So happy May Day, everyone. Isn't it wonderful when a plan comes together? Well, almost comes together anyway. And it is always rather unexpected. I am reminded of my many, many Open University days. Looking into the future with at last 6 years of study ahead could be extremely dispiriting, however engaging the current course might be. The only way to keep moving forward was to focus on this year. Ignore the long trek and just enjoy, or occasionally tolerate, the present. This has proved to be a valuable lesson, as a number of our projects are now just about finished at last. The grooming room in the back porch has thwarted us for several reasons, most recently due to the lack of a plumber. We have a lovely space with cupboards and worktops. We've even moved the freezer in there, so have access to cupboards in other areas. The main feature, however, the sink, remains undeterminedly unfinished. We tried to source the waste pipe over the last 8 weeks to no avail. It is a particular brand with a weir overflow, and none of the pipes would fit. We moved through two types, plans A and B, to something we looked up on YouTube, plan C. This almost worked, but not quite. On to plan D for desperation. We got a fitting with no overflow outlet, and Jackie sealed off the weir at the base. The sink is deep and only for washing small dogs, and we had the same arrangement in Saltburn. In 25 years, we never needed to use the overflow, so unless dementia strikes, we are confident it will work. Then, after dry fitting the pipes, we found the back outlet was about 2 inches too high. So our plumber friend has agreed to come back on Monday, shorten the pipe, and maybe, just maybe, that plan will finally come together. There's still no movement yet on the final stage of the water pump and system. That plan is constantly floated every week, but no one comes. We are going to have one last push next week before trying something else. Watch this space, but don't hold your breath. We do have a rather splendid fence, however. This is the most recent of the plans, and the ever-reliable Fergus and the lovely fence man Bill did it all in a couple of days. We now have a secure boundary with stock quality wire to keep out stray dogs, random hunters, and fly tippers. Fergus made and fitted two mammal gates, lining them up with the main little tracks across the wood. This means the wildlife that lives, crosses, or hunts across the land will still have access. When we've saved up a bit, we'll do the same up on the top area. The most unexpected plan to come together was the appearance of the roadmen. Our lane has been in a terrible condition, broken down and torn up by years of neglect and farm traffic. For 2 days, we had loud, occasionally very loud, machinery up and down. The roller was so close outside, it felt as if it shook the walls. No mean feat, as they're over a foot thick. It certainly shook everything inside them and on them. Doors, windows, gutters, roof tiles, and the occasional startled blackbird all rang in unison as it ground along. The end result is excellent, but this is Ireland, not without a couple of surprises. At the end of the first day, I looked out of my window to see the tarmac machine reversing onto our front drive. I ran downstairs to see what was happening and was told they were informed they could store the vehicles here as the property was empty. I pointed out there was a car by the front door, there were lights on, and three dogs were shouting through the windows at them. Did it look empty? They were very nice and a bit apologetic, and after some negotiation, we let them use the drive overnight. I have to say, their parking was jaw-droppingly impressive. Then they casually mentioned they began work at 7 in the morning, something three dogs confirmed the next day. Well, the road is very good now, a second surprise. It's 6 inches higher, so we can't open our small front gate. We both had COVID boosters last week, and they provoked a bit of a reaction. I ran one of those interesting temperatures, over 38.5, which makes everything ache and shake. It's better than the real thing, though, so no regrets. Jackie is finally getting some energy back and is now tackling some of the long-laid plans with great enthusiasm. She's almost finished a stand for a new bird feeder sent by my lovely sister. We have drained the bath in the garden and got it up on blocks. And yesterday we finally wrestled the old taps off. In the end, it took a pipe wrench, a Stanley knife, a wire brush, a 12-inch adjustable spanner, a heat gun, and two determined women. Now we are going to paint the outside green, get some gravel and compost, and we will finally have our herb garden. Yes, it is wonderful when a plan comes together. Now, on with the next lot. Thank you for listening, and a happy Easter to you all.
There we are. Okay, Jenny, obviously prescient powers at work here, because you'll now serve as the subject for three questions that I actually have, all of which are indirectly connected with respect to what we've just been hearing in terms of your Tipperary tale. First off, looking towards the notion of food, and obviously you talked about Brack. Upcoming, we've got a television chef and indeed ace guru, his name is Leslie Waters, who's talking about why we should all be eating salmon for Easter, etc. Are you a salmon fan, and is there much fish in Ireland that you avail yourself of?
Oh, the fish here is excellent. Most of it is caught in the Atlantic. It gets to us very, very fresh, and actually Thursday is the day our fishman gets his incredibly fresh delivery. Jackie goes down there, and as soon as she walks in, he takes a whole side of salmon out from underneath. We cut it up ourselves, and we have beautiful fresh fish. It's some of the best I've ever had.
There we are. Absolutely spot on there. Next one up will be from the PDSA, the People's Dispensary for Sick Animals, Vet and Communications Officer Shauna. Shauna's actually advising most folk to at least understand how to actually give CPR to their pets. Now, is that something you ever had to encounter with any of your Tibetan Spaniels?
We've never had to give CPR. I know how to do it in theory. Our oldest one did have a series of fits over 24, 36 hours, and I had to bring her back and get her comfortable and get her rested again. And that was absolutely terrifying. Unfortunately, we seem to have done the right thing, but I think it's a really useful skill, and absolutely, I would say everybody should know how to do that.
Well, there we are. I mean, not that we would anticipate our pets going down with this particular aspect, but obviously you can hear more about that from Shauna in a wee while from now. And finally, the other question, which features Dave Ravel, who set up the company Loft Zone. Do you have a loft in Ireland? And if so, are you going to be exploiting the space in the near future, or have you already exploited the space?
I'm sitting in it now. Originally, it was the farm cottage for John Ryan, who was the man who owned the area around. And it was a typical Irish farm cottage, single story, thick walls, and four small rooms on the ground floor. They have added a top story, which is unusual in Ireland, which is why the roofs are all over the place. And I've taken one of the rooms and turned it into my writing room and den. As far as a loft is concerned, no, you don't want to go too high in Ireland. The wind is much too strong.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Now, let's turn back to Brack, of course. Is that kind of a delicacy that is actually there? And you have obviously 57 varieties of Brack, all of which taste exactly the same.
Oh, dear. Yes. It's like very old malt loaf mixed up with sawdust. It really is horrible. Everybody who's Irish around here seems to really like it and boasts about their mother's wonderful brack and offer to give us one so we can appreciate it. We have to very, very politely say, no, we're fine. No, thank you. But we'll. That's really kind. Thank you. It's awful stuff. It's punishing yourself for having a cake, Alex.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's hope nobody's actually listening to this. Otherwise, we could have a brack war on our hands and have it any news. Gotcha. That wouldn't do it well in any way, shape or form. So let's talk about your writing now, Jenny, very briefly in terms of how things are going, because obviously we did Puppy Brain as one of the books of the month a wee while ago. How's the Alex Hastings saga coming on? Are we likely to see more of that as 2023 continues to develop?
I would hope so. I'm getting book. I've taken book five out again, having got it back from the failed publishers, and I'm getting it ready to be published, hopefully in the second half of the year. So that will be the beginning of another four books that make a series. It's still in Somerset. It's very much still Alex Hastings. And I'm about halfway through book six, half of which is set in Poland, which is still Alex Hastings.
Well, precisely. You've got to set a challenge, obviously, ensure that you have a Polish connection as well. Jenny, it's been awesome. Can you remind people how people can actually follow you on the socials and keep updated with your work on a daily basis?
I have a website where I publish the up-to-date Tipperary tales, and that's jennyfinch.me.uk, Jenny with an IE. I'm also on Facebook, and I have a marginal presence on Twitter at the moment.
Well, there you go. Clearly, TikTok hasn't quite got to the joys of Tipperary as yet.
Not yet, no.
But that's definitely that's a maybe, possibly. And I'm sure the Chinese government will be delighted to hear that. Jenny Finch, as ever, a delight. Another Tipperary tale will be coming through. You can, of course, access most of the Tipperary tales by going to the southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com website. It should be fairly straightforward to access them there. Just literally look for the heading, which is Tipperary Tales. And you're listening to this on Siren Radio as well. So just follow a link from thence onwards. I'm sure you'll find wonderment at the end of it. Jenny Finch, for the moment, take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Gliding on the river, Canadian geese crab along the bank. Back wheel of my bike begins to quiver. The chain is wrapped around the crank. Oh, ladies, must be doggy training. Walking, throwing balls, chasing all the sheep. Well, the farmer stands around and he's complaining. His mad cows are being put to sleep. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul. From the brewery, like someone in the van, the latest pope in a vat of beer that keeps pumping out with fury, while the church bell ringers tangled in his rope. But there's a temple on an island. Think of all the gods and what they feel. You can only find them in the deepest silence. I gotta get off of this big wheel. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul. I'll be swimming until I can find those waters that the warm unbounded ocean up bleeds. That's flowing to your parents, sons and daughters. It's still an easy thing for us to miss. Blades go skimming through the water. I hear see the coxswain shout is his instructions about. With this crew, oh, it could be a tall order. Have we time to sort all these things out? Sometimes my life it feels like fiction. Some of the days it's really quite serene. I'm a living proof of life's contradiction. One half's going where the other half's just been. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul. I'm a Pisces fish and the river runs through my soul.
Well, fish on Friday, in certain instances, is pretty much a staple thing in many ways. It kind of comes across from, obviously, Christianity and a whole range of other reasons and rationales for that. But according to the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, more than half of us plan on cooking for our families and friends at home. And indeed, partly, we'll be focusing on fish on Good Friday. So to talk us through this and also other great dishes that can be made to celebrate the Easter weekend, we're delighted to actually welcome head chef extraordinaire and indeed generally all-round wonderful person, Leslie Waters. How are you, Leslie?
What an introduction, Alex. Hello.
Well, it's always good to connect with your good self. But just share with us in terms of this whole side of things, the whole notion. I mean, are you a pescatorian come Fridays?
Absolutely. I mean, it's been around a long time, you know, as you rightly said, Christianity and medieval times. And I love fish, but I have to say I'm a massive fan of wild canned salmon. I grew up with canned salmon. I grew up in the 60s and I've got this wonderful memory of my mum making delicious dishes, especially the best brown bread cress and canned salmon sandwiches, which I still make for my family this day. It's an amazing product because canned wild salmon is wild, it's natural, it's sustainable, and it's already cooked. It's just nutritionally as good as fresh fish, but far less in cost. And I just think a lot of people tomorrow are going to be celebrating, getting together with all their family, eating fish. So I've got lots of lovely recipe ideas for them.
Now, in terms of the nutritional benefits, you've already alluded to it there, in terms of the way in which you can consume this. I mean, it does actually sort of help no end of our best well-being to actually ensure that we've got good fuel in there, presumably a lot better than, shall we say, a beefsteak would.
Yeah, absolutely. And really versatile because it's already cooked. It's in a can. It's in the cupboard. It's wild. It's delicious. You can buy pink or red. And once you open it up, you just need to drain it slightly. And then you can use it in hundreds of different ways. I've got a couple of lovely recipes and there's loads of recipes. There's a wonderful website for Alaska seafood, which I'll give you in a moment. And it's really interesting because it tells you all about the sustainability, the nutrition side of it, and also some wonderful recipes on there as well. I love, I always think of my mum when I make this. I was talking to you earlier about the cress sandwiches. I do like a slightly modern version of it, which is practically no cook at all, but it feeds a family of six. It's fabulous. You need some good bread. And you need a couple of cans of wild Alaska salmon. I like using the red, or you could use a mix of the two. And you want to toast the bread with a bit of olive oil cut it into croûtes and toast it in the oven. And then while it's toasting, you drain your lovely wild salmon and you mix it with horseradish and a little bit of Greek yogurt or creme fraiche and season it with a little bit of lemon and black pepper. You don't need to add salt because it's delicious and it's rich. And when those croûtes come out, you dollop this lovely kind of like rough pate on top of your hot croûtes. And then you can make a lovely salad with rocket, avocado and orange segments. And you can toss that in a bit of olive oil and you dunk that on the top. Oh, and then
you
see,
you do this deliberately, Leslie, just to get our taste buds watering, you see, that sort of basis. And we just say, we must have this. Let's go back a little bit, though, to Alaska salmon. Why is it so important? I mean, is it the Eskimos who are actually based in Alaska that effectively will sort of say, oh, yes, we'll go for this? Or is it something completely different?
I think they've been around. Alaska was founded, canned wild Alaska seafood was founded in 1959. And it started with their fish being utilized and developed and maintained. In Alaska, you know, it's sustainable. It applies to the fish, the local communities, the fishermen and women who fish as well. So it's not just the Eskimos. And it's the most amazing product. I mean, they do lots of different fish, but my favorite is the wild canned Alaska salmon. It's just delicious. And you can keep it in your cupboard. It's there. You haven't got to worry about whether or not it's going to go off. There's no wastage. You can have it with skin on or with the bone. And the bones are so soft. They're full of calcium. Or you can buy it with none of that, just the pure salmon. So it's incredibly versatile.
And of course, probably designed to celebrate the baggage of the Alaska becoming United States of America, basically back in 1959. Historically, could be an interesting line there. Let's talk a little bit about sustainability, because obviously people are very concerned about that, especially these days with respect to the whole notion of if you get somebody say, yeah, but if it's coming from Alaska, how can it be sustainable? What's wrong with Scottish salmon?
There's nothing wrong at all with Scottish salmon, but I think what I love is the fact that it's so versatile. You have it in a can, it's in the cupboard, you can use it all the time, and it's just as good as fresh fish. I think sometimes there's a little bit of snobbery with canned salmon, and I think as long as it's, you know, wild Alaskan canned salmon, red or pink, it's wonderful stuff and it's very, very nutritious. Why shouldn't you have that in your cupboard as well? Enjoy it.
Yeah, obviously you talk about cupboards there. What about fridges and refrigerators, etc.? I mean, is frozen salmon as good as fresh salmon, or is it a case of, if possible, go down to the fishmongers?
I think it's all good stuff, to be honest with you, whether or not it's in a can, whether or not it's frozen or fresh. I think where you get your salmon from is very important. You know, this is this salmon that you have in a can, it swims wild, you know, it's not farmed. And it has got the most wonderful taste. I think people really want to know more about sustainability and they want to feel good about the food that they're buying. But at the same time, you know, I find, you know, having my cookery school for all these years, there's still people out there who aren't very confident, you know, who want easy things to do, but to prepare great food for their family. And, you know, Easter, I think for me, I love it more than Christmas, I think, because it's far more chilled out. And I think more and more people now are wanting to entertain from home because of the cost of food. And they want to know, you know, about it. They want to know where it's from. They want to feel good about their food.
Now, you've authored 11 cookbooks, so enough for a football team there. We still want a substitute to come through. I'm sure that'll happen. Number 12 will be in the offing.
I sincerely hope.
will there be something which focuses just on fish that's coming up, or have you already done one which is just focusing on fish?
No, I do a real mix, actually. I did my first cookbook, actually, which was a vegetarian cookbook, always at the end. It was called Broader Than Beans. You can't get it anymore, so I'm not advertising. But at the end of the recipe, I would always say, hey, guys, you know, if you want to add fish to this, this is how you do it. And I believe that a good diet is a balanced diet. So we get a bit of everything. And I'm very proud of that cookbook. Actually, if you leave me your address, I'll send you one.
Wow, this is absolutely fantastic stuff there. So let's move on very briefly though to notion the whole question of the when you have fish, etc. Shall we actually use the line that fish is not just for Good Friday, it's for life, that actually as a fully
Yeah.
pescatorian soul, there are so many things you can actually do with it, especially salmon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's such a versatile thing. Whether or not you just want a snack, you know, sometimes I will have just a bowl of soup and I might want a bit more, so I'll have some bread with it. But then often I will take canned Alaskan salmon and just toss it through some salad leaves with a little bit of dressing and stick it on top of the soup and then eat the salad through the soup. Maybe it's got some spring onions on it. But it's delicious because you've instantly then got lean protein that you're eating, as long, you know, with everything else, you know, the omega threes and the sixes, the fatty acids. And it's such a great thing to eat. But also, it's something you can stick in your cupboard and you can have a drop of a hat. You haven't got to go anywhere special. You haven't got to worry about it going off in the fridge.
Clearly, Leslie, we're going to have to get you up to the Siren Studios to actually do a sort of live demonstration of the whole thing. So, extraordinary
Can
material.
I give you the, Alex, can I give you the website
I was
of
just going to
where?
say that's the next and almost penultimate question, Leslie. Would you like to share with us the website for this these fabulous recipes and more?
Yeah, absolutely. It's www.wildalaskaseafood.co.uk. Check it out. It's a fabulous website.
Fantastic. We'll finish with two traditional questions. Leslie Waters, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. That's okay. That is customer
Totally.
satisfaction tick on that basis. And the next critical question is, can we look forward to connecting with you again in the not too distant future? Will you kindly return?
I would love to, Alex.
Leslie Waters, TV chef extraordinaire, and of course, ace cookbook author. Huge thanks. And have a great Easter, Leslie.
And you, Alex.
It's generally agreed that actually knowing some form of first aid is very good when it comes to dealing with humans. But when you actually realise that 75% of pet owners have admitted that in an emergency they wouldn't know how to perform CPR on their pet, with little or no training having been received, then maybe we need to actually think about how we can address this and to actually talk about the importance of why pet owners should actually learn pet first aid. We're delighted to welcome to the programme veterinary nurse and communications officer at the PDSA. That's the wonderful Shauna Walsh. How are you, Shauna?
Hello, thank you for having me.
Excellent. It's good to connect with your good self. And surprising, I say, in terms of what this PDSA survey has revealed. I mean, particularly the fact that 3/4 of pet owners have had no training in terms of how to actually cope with what could well be a problem with their pet.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, it isn't surprising. I mean, when you get a pet, or if you've had a pet for a while, nobody wants to think about, you know, accidents or emergencies that could happen. But actually, you know, learning these skills and these techniques and what to do in an emergency could really make a difference to whether your pet survives that situation or not. You know, it can save a pet's life. So it's well worth knowing.
And certainly given the need to act quickly, possibly easier than actually rushing your pet to the PDSA when there might be a challenge in terms of time and various other sort of factors. Talk us through this handy first aid guide that you've produced in terms of everything, not just from CPR, but also how to spot things such as broken bones.
Yeah, absolutely. So available for free on our website is a pet first aid guide, which is a really, really in-depth, valuable resource for all pet owners to have to hand and to read through. And it will guide you through how to spot an emergency, because a lot of people might think that that is common sense, but sometimes there's more subtle things that our pets do that show us that they're in pain or they're injured. So it's raising awareness of how to keep an eye on those kind of things. But it will also talk you through different emergency situations like heat stroke or seizures or choking, and lots of practical tips that pet owners can put in place to try and help in between when that emergency situation happens and before they seek veterinary attention. That's the point where this first aid guide targets, because that's where pet owners can make the biggest difference.
I mean, obviously we hope that our pets will actually be in tip-top health most of the time. Do you think there's any danger of people actually sort of over-stressing and over-pampering their pets as a result of thinking of all the things that could go wrong? Obviously it's the fear that could be more problematic than the actual actions itself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we can't wrap our pets in cotton wool. You know, unfortunately, accidents do happen, even with all the, you know, the best will in the world. Accidents do happen, you know, whether it's your pet jumping off the sofa as they normally would, but then on this one occasion they hurt their legs. You know, it's all kind of the unknown. But I think the key thing to remember is you can prepare as much as possible for these situations. You know, you can try and prevent them from happening in the first place by, you know, keeping those kind of things at home that might hurt our pets, like those toxic foods and human medications, cleaning products, keeping all those things out of the way. And the first aid guide focuses heavily on prevention with that kind of thing as well, because we do want owners to feel prepared, but also be in the knowledge that unfortunately accidents do happen, but you can also prepare for those situations too.
I mean, just looking at some of the figures for the PDSA, last year you provided 2 million veterinary treatments to over 390,000 pets in 48 pet hospitals across the UK. Clearly the demand for the PDSA is as big as it ever has been.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there is a lot of people that are turning to us for help with their pets and the kind of veterinary treatment costs associated with that. I think a lot of that is to do with the pandemic, where unfortunately a lot of people maybe lost their jobs, and also the cost of living crisis as well. People that maybe were kind of financially managing before now on, and luckily we are here to help those owners. I mean, you know, more than half of the people who rely on our services are age 55 and over, and a further 37% are disabled or living with serious health conditions. So we really are a vital lifeline for helping millions of vulnerable people and their pets stay together.
And indeed, in terms of the cost of living crisis that you mentioned, it's interesting. You've also got some information about that on the PDSA website, which is pdsa.org.uk/cost of living crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. This has been a huge focus for us because we know the cost of living crisis is affecting everybody, and we want to make sure that we're putting the information out there to try and make sure that people know that there are things that they can do at home to save costs, whether it be on, you know, pet food or learning to groom your pet at home. We have a huge amount of resources in addition to the Pet First Aid Guide.
Just returning briefly to that topic again, the Pet First Aid Guide. I mean, it literally, is this pretty much a an all-encompassing guide to everything for cats, dogs, even rabbits and such like? Does it cover most of our traditional pets?
So it covers predominantly for cats and dogs. I think when we start looking at rabbits and small pets, the things kind of change for them. So the techniques that we show for cats and dogs don't necessarily have as good of a success rate for rabbits and small pets, just because of their size, the, you know, even down to the fact that a rabbit's heart beats a lot quicker than a cat or a dog. So trying to replicate that with kind of a CPR technique is unfortunately quite difficult. But I would say that definitely the first aid guide is the first place to go to have a read through. But then if you want to know more, if pet owners are kind of seeking that practical experience, then seek out a veterinary led pet first aid course where you can practice these techniques under the guidance of a veterinary professional.
And we started off by talking about how to perform CPR on your pet, cat or dog, etc. How common is that? I mean, is it a case of as pets have sadly become less fit in some ways, then they're more likely to actually suffer coronary issues?
So I think as a pet owner, if your pet does go into cardiac arrest and their heart stops and they stop breathing, I do think kind of a judgment call needs to be made as to whether CPR is appropriate in that situation. Now, generally when these things happen, it happens in kind of two pathways. One is that the, like you say, the pet is elderly, maybe they've got underlying health conditions, maybe a condition with their heart. Those are those situations where we need to think about, is it right and is it fair to do CPR? But that only as the pet owner would you be able to make that decision. But then we have the other reason why the, you know, cardiac arrest happens, and it might be due to choking or drowning, you know, an otherwise healthy pet that's been in an unfortunate accident. And in those situations, you know, I think we could all comfortably say CPR is appropriate. However, it's not hugely common that pet owners need to do this, but it's one of those things where you don't know you need to know it until you need to know it. So it's worth learning about before anything happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the guide can be found on pdsa.org.uk, presumably, and find the appropriate sort of link from there.
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to our website and in the search bar, if you put in first aid, then everything will come up that you need to know, including the downloadable free guide.
Sean, it's been fascinating just getting an insight in terms of some of the things that people can actually avail themselves of and the excellent work that PDSA continues to do. Many thanks indeed for that. For the moment, though, Shona Walsh, a veterinary nurse and communications officer at PDSA, keep on keeping on and keep saving pets' lives.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Okay, so you may well have heard of your attic. I say heard of it. You may just be using your attic as a storage place, etc. But maybe, according to Loft Zone, maybe you have other intentions for dealing with your attic, etc. And how can you actually convert it into a whole range of wonderful things? Well, to actually talk us through some of the activities that might be going on to actually enhance the joys of the Loft Zone itself or the attic, we're delighted to welcome the Chief Executive Officer of Loft Zone. That's the wonderful Dave Ravel to the programme. How are you, Dave?
I'm very good. How are you, Alex?
Yeah, all great. Now, I mean, I must admit, yes, the house in which I live has had an attic, and it's always been there. It was converted into a playroom back in the day. It sort of stayed with that point of view. It's mostly a storage space now. What are the best ways in which people who are listening to this, who have an attic, who maybe just store stuff in it, could well be benefiting from using more sensible views or adjusting their loft spaces?
So you know, when we started Loft Zone 10 years ago, It was a good idea in a pub. I mean, literally in a pub where the pub's called Hen and Chickens. It's near Woking if you ever want to visit. And what we wanted to do was to make people proud of their loft, right? They wanted the loft not to be a dumping ground of stuff you throw through the loft hatch. We wanted people to insulate it, for sure. That's very important in today's climate. But also to feature raised loft boarding, which you put as boarding above the insulation, to put loft shelving up, lighting. Even nowadays, we have loft wardrobes. So it becomes a usable space that helps you to increase the value of your home and decrease the clutter. And it's not just a dumping ground. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay, sounds like a wonderful mission. Do you feel as though the citizens of Britain are grasping it with both hands and saying, right, now is the time I shall be exploring my loft?
Well, so, since we started, we've had 100,000 lofts have been loft zoned. And so that's okay, but there's 24.5 million to go. So still got a long way. But what we did is recently we did a survey and we asked people what they're planning to do with the forthcoming bank holiday weekends. So bank holiday weekends often associated with DIY. No surprise there. And we asked people if they're going to do that. The survey showed that 59% said yes. About a quarter of those, because they wanted to improve the value of their property, make it more saleable. That's probably fair enough, given the recent turmoil in the markets. But a quarter for the opposite reason, totally the opposite reason, that they didn't want to move ever. They wanted this to be their forever home. And people are actually looking now to declutter, to create more space elsewhere in the home. And they realise the loft is actually probably the biggest opportunity because it's a place that most people don't think about very much. It's underutilised. It's often quite large. I mean, a loft on average is 20 square metres in the UK. That's clearly the size of the footprint of the floor below. If you're in a bungalow, it's the size of all of your house. And people are trying to now realising there are options to turn the loft into something which can be a lovely place that they can use for storage and even in some cases show off to their neighbours as somewhere to be proud of.
It's interesting you mentioned the bungalow there because I'm sure that people will be listening who would say, ah, yes, but what about bungalows? They don't have the kind of attic or loft that we've come to appreciate. But presumably most houses do have this loft space that's there that can be used for, as you said, storage or indeed other activities.
Yeah, sure. If you've got a flat roof, then you don't have loft space. But most people in the UK don't have a flat roof. Newer properties have very, very tall ridge heights, it's called. So basically the loft is a very tall part of the property and you can walk around in it. Older properties are often a little bit shallower. Sometimes it's more of a crawl space, particularly as you get into the eaves. But everyone's got a loft. Pretty much everyone in the UK has got a loft. And even top floors of flats, of course, as well. And there's always opportunity there. So even if, I mean, our smallest kit is a 3 square meter kit, just a tiny thing. Our biggest ones are 52 square meters. It's a modular. You can choose anything you want in between. And so even if you just create a bit of extra storage space, that space that's clutter, that's not filling up your spare bedroom or your garage or your shed if you have one. And it just makes the home overall a bit nicer to live in.
And allowing for the fact that lofts can sometimes be a storage space for both clutter and hidden treasures, would you say it's important to do an inventory and actually, before you start decluttering, throwing everything else out, maybe consider possibly whether you should go on the Antiques Roadshow or something?
Well, that's exactly. So one of the most interesting parts of this survey we did was we asked people, firstly, the value of what was in their lofts, and on average is about £1,000, which is quite a lot, actually, right? It's quite a lot to just chuck up for the hatch. But also what was there. So interesting. So some people found their old schoolwork. A lot of people found old family photos, which is lovely. Jewellery, old coins. There's quite a lot of money that's hidden away in your loft. And we're saying, well, why hide it away? Let's put flooring and lighting in. Let's put shelving in. Let's put wardrobes in. Let's organise those sorts of things and realise the value from your loft.
Clearly, the old line can be adapted to there's gold in them, there are lofts, really, if we're looking for at least Britain in the present day. Have you found anything in your own loft, Dave, that you've ever sort of encountered, which you thought, oh, I wasn't expecting that?
Well, when I went up the first time, I found zero insulation, which really, you know, in today's day and age was awful, right? So that's the very first thing I ever put in lots of insulation. And I found apart from that, actually, no, you know, I'm a bit boring because my loft was completely empty until I moved in, but now it's completely full because, like many people, I've got a whole lifetime's worth of possessions. So probably ask me in 5 years' time when I go back and I realise what I've put up there and forgotten about.
Ah, oh, yes, the old notion of evanescence, the fading of memories over time until they're restored through actually heading into your loft. Dave, how can people find out more about Loft Zone? Where's the website that you'd recommend people should head off to?
Sure. So our website is loftzone.co.uk, loftzone.co.uk. We're also on every social media platform. And what we try to do is make this as simple as possible. So a lot of people have never really thought about their loft as an opportunity. And so we talk about the types of insulation you can have, the type of raised loft boarding you can have, all the stuff you can do for storage. And we take people step by step with lots of photos and examples.
Sounds absolutely superb. Dave Rabal, Chief Executive Officer of Loft Zone. Huge thanks, and continue enjoying your loft, Dave.
Thanks very much. And you too. Cheers, Alex.